to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, returning for his second podcast, Bobby Osinski. Bobby, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. Hi, guys. Yeah. And ladies.
Hi.
And next to him, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hello, Mike.
And next to Scott, we've got Brandon Birdsong.
What's up, Mike?
And finally, next to me on my left, we've got the one and only, the Iron Man. I've never missed a podcast. Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
I think we should just, like, kidnap him one day and just, you know.
what podcast number is this that I haven't missed?
This is podcast number 92.
Wow.
92.
They said it wouldn't last.
It's 92 Tuesdays where Rob's been free and available.
Yes. Well, because you've been willing to move it a few times.
I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, he's been willing to move it a few times to help me keep the record.
That's
but
true.
I do appreciate that.
And today we are honored to have with us two people, Tara Duffy from MusicJobs.com.
Hello.
Tara.
Thank you.
And Tammy Ramanyuk from MediaMatch.com.
Hi, Mike.
And both of these websites are, Tara, why don't you say it?
They're online networking communities and job boards.
There you go. See, I couldn't say it any better than that. And so in the second half of the podcast, we are going to be talking about jobs, all things jobs, how to find them, where to find them, do you want them? And how to hold on to them. So that's going to be coming up. So thank you guys for joining us. Before we get to that, though, there's a couple things that we need to do, and we need to answer a couple questions that have been posted on our Facebook page. People see it's interactive. So they post, we answer. They post, we answer. First of all, we're going to just dive right into it. Room correction devices. Do you guys use them? Have you used them before? What do you think of them? And just so you know, a room correction device is a little device that kind of analyzes your room and then makes corrections sonically so that you have a tighter room, for lack of a better word.
It makes the corrections, or it just tells you where the deficiencies are?
It makes the corrections.
It sweeps the room in three different places, and then it comes up with an averaging.
And then you run your audio through it, and it's supposedly corrected for that room?
Exactly. So, obviously, that's a no from Rob.
No, I was just asking for the benefit of our listeners, because some people may be saying, what the heck are you talking about?
But, yeah, so one of our listeners just wanted to know about if we've used them, like the Ergo system from KRK or the ARC system from IK Multimedia. And you guys ever used it?
Actually, I've never used either of those systems. I've tried using some really expensive systems that some consultants brought over, and we played with them. And the truth is, nothing was as good as just fixing the acoustic deficiencies in the room. And so I would have to say that if the really expensive, I mean, we're talking multi-$1,000 systems, were only okay, I'd say that the cheaper ones are probably not okay. I think it's always better to use your ears or have an acoustician use their ears. It's not expensive to get someone who understands what they're doing to come over and actually just fix the deficiencies in your room. And a lot of times you can fix those deficiencies with, you know, little absorption pads here and there or little reflectors or whatever. It's not that expensive to do it right. And I mean, I have to say fairly, I haven't played with either of those, but my sense would be that there are better ways to do it.
I've played with them a bunch, actually. I think what happens is that if you've got the money to invest in acoustics, that's fine. A lot of the high-end and high mid-range are pretty much easy to contain through either absorption or diffraction. The problem is when you start getting to lower frequencies, you start getting standing waves, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And if you want something, if you want to take a room that's a bedroom or something that's not very good, and you want to be able to control a little bit, those little Behringer EQs are interesting. Some of attenuating, self-EQing systems. I mean, they're interesting. I think what you have to do is try it out, take a listen to it, and see if you like it any better or worse. I think it's important to find material that you're familiar with and how it plays, and then you've got to see how it plays within your environment. Because the reality is most of the environments are not very acoustically well, especially when you're in lower frequencies.
Right.
I mean, you've got standing waves in the low end. It costs a lot of money because you need a lot of soft dead space to absorb the low end, and a lot of people just can't afford that in their environment.
How much do these systems cost?
Well, like the KRK, I think, is around $600, $599.
Yeah, the JBL. There's also the – I mean, I've got one of my Denon system. It's really actually pretty good.
You know, I've used a couple of them. I've used the ARC system from IK Multimedia, and I have the JBLs, the 4308s, in my studio, and you know, they have a built-in room correction for one frequency only. And frankly, what I've found is, you know, just like you guys were saying, for about the same amount of money that you would spend, you can redo the acoustics of your room, and it will sound better anyway.
Yeah.
The ARC system works well, and that you can take as many samples as you want. It's not only three. That can go up to 20, and maybe even more.
So averaging? 20 different
it's averaging, yeah, right. So basically it widens your sweet spot. But, you know, frankly, I think you're better off. It works. It does work, but I like the sound of just fixing your acoustics better.
Right. Brandon, you ever used
No, but I need one in my office.
Yeah, especially in your office.
Yeah, it's like a little box.
Yeah. I just, you know, I find I'm just hesitant to put anything between me and the speakers. It's just, you know, if you have
it depends on your room.
That's true, too. And I've been fortunate to mix in rooms that haven't been quite horrible enough to need one of those. But I just think if you have a good reference material, you kind of know where it is. And then, you know, nobody just mixes on their speaker and then just says, well, I hope this plays well in my car stereo. You know, you're usually referencing your mixes on a lot of different places.
But that's not exactly true.
Okay, I'm wrong.
Well, no, you're actually right. I think pros actually do that. But maybe the people that are actually listening to this, a lot of the people, they're not pros and they don't realize that that's the way that works, that you have to listen on a number of different systems to kind of figure out, you know, where you're at.
Right.
Because a lot of people just think, well, okay, this is what I hear, and this is the way it ought to be, and how come it doesn't sound good when I take it someplace else, you know? And really, you know, we all know because that's the way we're growing up.
But one thing I'll say is I live in a 5-1 environment more than stereo with subs. One of the things that's nice is you want to pop an X-curve in on your EQ, boom, you've done it. So you can automatically simulate different audio environments if you want to put a delay in your surrounds. Because a lot of times your surrounds are closer to you than your mains and small rooms. Mm-hmm. So you want to put a delay so you can actually start controlling rooms. Because we've got probably over, 200 edit rooms? And they're not all acoustically great. There's no way.
Right.
So we put them in and they sound good enough. But if you're a sound designer and you're sitting there making something explode or something go boom, and all of a sudden you've got standing waves at 100 hertz, which is pretty common in a room, all of a sudden you think, oh, this sounds great. Then you play it back in the dubbing theater, and it's got no balls.
You know, I think you're right, though. That's the one system, that's the one time where you're not going to play it in a lot of different places when you're doing 5-1 mixing. Yeah. And you're not going to have... Sometimes you're lucky and you have a couple reference.
And acoustics in 5-1 are complicated because you've got multiple speakers hitting multiple walls. It's not just a front to back.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's a giant ping pong game.
But still, if you improve the acoustics of your room, chances are stereo and 5-1 are both going to work better in that room if you actually make the physical improvement.
Sure. I mean, basic, you know, you can do a lot. You could probably go, 90% very inexpensively with acoustics.
Yeah.
Which I do agree with. That other 10%. You know,
it costs a lot of money.
It costs a lot of money.
Every percentage from there costs a lot of dough.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I think we've covered that.
You know what else?
Yes, no.
There are a lot of really good acousticians out there, and they're not that expensive. I mean, the rates are reasonable, and it would probably, if you're actually contemplating spending $600-$700 for any kind of system, it's probably worth, you know, $30 to $50 to talk to a guy for a little while.
That's true.
Get their take on what your room needs, because chances are, I mean, in my last house, I had a studio in the living room, and it was a horrendous space.
It was. I can attest to that.
And one of the things that made the biggest difference was putting these little absorption pads in the corners, these little triangle-shaped pads. It was not a subtle difference. And, yeah, for little pillows, they were expensive. They were like $80.
Right.
But they made an unbelievably huge difference.
And Rob made a convert of me because he goes, I'm going to spend money on an acoustician. This place was pretty much the poster child for the worst acoustic space I've ever seen. So he goes, I'm going to spend money on an acoustician. I'm like, you're crazy. Because you're going to spend – it's already bad. But you know what? This crazy guy came in, and I'm sitting there like – he's like, okay. And he's like listening to the
furniture. He's not that crazy. Sorry about that, Ken. He's not –
No, you know what? Crazy in a good way because he actually listened to it.
Oh, he'd accept that. He'd accept that.
And all of a sudden, he made these slightly odd little adjustments that were absolutely brilliant. And all of a sudden, you could immediately – it wasn't like subtle, like, I think I can hear the difference. He did, and he made it sound way better.
And I get news for you. It was less than 600 from start to finish.
I'm just finishing up a book on this. And
reading or writing?
Right. Yeah, hey, that's
good question.
Valid
right?
question, yeah. No, I'm writing a book on building your own studio on a budget. And one of the things that the book covers is, in fact, you know, some proper acoustics and what it takes to get to where everybody really wants to go in a big studio. And the fact of the matter is, it's fairly easy, if you know the tricks, to make it work. Every studio, every room, no matter what it is, if you have a reflection-free zone, which means it's soft all around your listening position, including the ceiling, that takes care of the first problem, and that's the first reflections off the speakers.
But how do you deal with it? Because this is one of the biggest problems I have. I have four video monitors, computer monitors, that have to be in front of me.
Yeah.
And I hate it because I can hear it.
But most people don't.
But they have at least one or two.
They'll have one. And actually, there's now some products that you can put on the back of the monitors that are absorption products that will absorb a lot of those frequencies that give you the bad reflections as well.
What about the reflection off the monitor itself?
Off the front or off?
Off the visual part.
The visual part.
Yeah,
well, that's always a problem, definitely.
Yeah.
But really, there's two problems that you have. The one is the reflection-free zone around what you're listening to. And the second one is always the low frequencies, and that's always a corner problem, just like you were saying. Mm-hmm. And really, there's 12 corners in a room. If you can treat at least 8 of them, you're going to be way, way ahead, and it doesn't cost a lot of money. Like I was saying, if it's $600, right, you could probably do this for $300 if you do it yourself and do a great job, and it doesn't take rocket science to do
it. So basically, you can win a lot of these battles in pre-production, you know?
Just
preparing for it. Fair enough. That's funny, rocket science.
I know. We have a rocket scientist here.
All right, well, you know what? That's great. Let me move on to the next thing. We have another listener, and that was, by the way, from Joe Marsh. Joe asked that question. So, Joe, do a little homework and fix your space up. And then,
do we know what city Joe's in?
No, okay. We know he's in the city of Facebook.
Mattresses, curtains, put them on the walls are great.
No, but if you do a little bit of acoustic treatment, and then you can visit it, you know.
Yeah,
and you know, just like anything else, even if you correct the speakers, you're still going to have to run, you know, music that you know through it. You're still going to have to run your own reference material through it.
Well, also think about it. Suppose you want to change your speakers. I mean, if you've improved the room, then whatever speakers you change to are going to sound better in that room too.
That's true.
And also, I think one last thing is, a lot of people, you need to buy the right speaker for the right room.
Right.
Sometimes they put these monster speakers in.
Right.
They totally vibrate the room, and now you're hearing a lot of the room. So get speakers that are the right size for the room that you're working in.
You know, one of the things you were just talking about, excuse me. That
sure.
You just mentioned about mattresses and mattresses aren't a good idea for any number of reasons. But what people generally use to make things soft, there's several things. The first is Owens Corning 703, and that's the standard that most studios use. But there's something cheaper and better, and it's called Rockwool. And Rockwool actually does the job better, and it's half the price.
Yeah.
Wow.
And if you can find it, it's
actually, I've got that on my walls in my studio.
Yeah, and it works great. And it goes lower, which all your
and it's also healthier. It's less toxic.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, speaking of speakers, NS10s.
Yeah.
Has anybody here used them? Or wait, has anybody here not used them, I should say? We have Lee from...
1,000 years ago.
From one of our listeners sent me an email and basically wanted our opinions on NS10s and the whole paradigm. And Rob, tell us about NS10s really quick.
Well, NS10s are a speaker that Yamaha produced.
1,000 years ago.
It's a two-way speaker. Yeah. They were a studio standard. There have been a few standard speakers over the years that every studio on earth kind of had to have. And not always because they sounded great, just because if you know every room has them, it's a way for you to listen to your music in other rooms on speakers that you're familiar with and get a sense of what the room is doing to the sound. So if you've mixed at your own place on NS10s and you go to another completely different room and listen on NS10s, you know what it's supposed to sound like on NS10s because right. that's what you created it on. And then you can hear how different that room is. So it's good to have a standard, and NS10s happen to be one of the standards. They're not the most accurate speaker in the world by a long shot. And there have been different flavors of them over the years. They were kind of shrill in the high end, and people used to put tissue and toilet paper over the tweeter. And then Yamaha came out with another sort of version of it.
Right.
And they've had magnetically shielded ones. And there have been different flavors over the years. I mean, I have, I think, a couple pair. I don't know that they've been plugged in for a long time. But at some point, they were just a really good sort of average-sounding speaker. There was nothing all that remarkable about them, but they just were loud and had punch. And
they excelled in their averageness.
They did. And you know what? Aura tones were the same thing. I actually have a very quick, funny Aura tone story. I bought Aura tones because you needed to have them if you were putting a studio together. And Aura tones, for people who don't know, are like little 6-inch cubes or 7-inch cubes. Very little tiny speakers. They only have one speaker in them, and, you know, they don't sound particularly great. And there was a card you had to fill in and send back to the manufacturer when you bought them. And so I filled in all these things, and they say sound quality, and I check poor. And, you know, design, and I check poor. And I, you know, I basically checked the poor box for every one of these features. And then they said, you know, write a comment. You know, do you have any other additional comments? And I wrote, I love these speakers, cannot live without them. They're a must-have. And I actually got a call back from the – gives you an idea how long ago it was. They actually had a customer service department. I got a call back asking if I had just made a mistake or, you know, what problem was, because they took these feedback cards seriously. And I said, listen, the whole reason I like these speakers is because of all of their deficiencies. They're a standard, and everybody knows what they sound like. And still to this day, if we're checking a television mix, we check it on Aura tones because it's like the perfect average terrible television speaker.
Yeah.
So they sound terrible, but, you know, you need them.
Scott, NS10s?
Not so much. You know, I used to, when I was doing a lot of music, I used NS10s because everybody did. But, you know, for me, what I did – first of all, a lot – the transducer technology, both for microphones and speakers, have become light years since that time. And what I ended up doing was I invested in several sets of speakers that kind of define my ears. Because the whole point is you want to get a speaker that you understand how it translates and you're used to how it sounds. So I think when you find something that you're used to, you can use it because you know it. And I think it's important to make that investment. I think it's one of the major investments in your career that you can do is to get a speaker that you understand.
Right.
And for me, because I work in a lot of different mediums, I ended up on about 3 to 4 pairs. Or 3 sets.
Wow.
Because they all kind of, you know, one of them is a horn set of speakers, which literally is a theater.
Right.
And some are more for video games, more smaller fields. And one's a nice home theater, kind of hi-fi, which is fun. But yeah, my ears are used to a handful of speakers.
Well, you know, what's amazing about the NS10s is they just had, you know, they were great at being average, as Rob was saying, but they were Yamaha was really lucky. I mean, they came out with the right speaker at the right time, because prior to that, you know, small little bookshelf speakers, especially powered ones, you had like the Meyer HD1s, which were like $5,000 for a pair of those, and then you could get.
But the NS10s were way before those.
Yeah,
no, I know, but, way before, yeah. But it's like.
Well, yeah, the Aura tones. I mean, the Aura tone was a little speaker, and the NS10 is a punch.
Yeah,
the kick and the snare actually had little. So when you're like, this is kind of fun.
And then we've had a shift of how people listen to music since then. You know, now it's more headphones and, you know, it's just they were the right speaker at the right time.
Well, I'd like to hear Bobby's take on this. But one of the reasons I think the NS10s are becoming less relevant is they became popular in the days when projects were finished in multiple studios. So you'd go from room to room, and often you'd be tracking different parts of an album in different cities, different studios, different environments. Now, most projects start and finish in the same place.
Right.
Yeah. So the need for a speaker standard between rooms isn't as critical.
I heard a statistic the other day that said that 87% of all music that we hear comes through a project studio right now. 87%.
What's the definition of a project studio? Because LA, a project studio is huge. I mean,
it can be something pretty crazy.
Yeah, but then again, it could be in somebody's bedroom, and it could be somewhere with an inbox, too.
That's true.
You know, and could do a dynamite job with it.
Sure, absolutely.
A little bit about the NS10s. I hated them. I could never get used to them. One of the things I noticed was that they did sound different depending on the amp that was driving them.
Hmm.
So, yeah, you had kind of this false representation of what you thought it would be, because if you go to one place, they'd sound good, and you go to another place, and they wouldn't sound quite so good, and it was because it was a different amp driving it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And the other thing that was interesting to me is I never got the hang of this, but there were people that mixed by looking at the speakers, by looking at how they crinkled. And if they crinkled the right way, they knew they had the low end right. I could never figure that out. But there's some great mixers, Dave Pensado and, dynamite mixers that did terrific high-end work, hits. And they'd be looking at the speakers to see how they'd be crinkling, and I just never got the hang of it myself.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that.
The other thing is, someone told me the story about how the NS10s actually became what they are. And it was strictly by luck. And Bob Clearmountain did it. Bob Clearmountain was mixing a bunch of hits out of New York, and he had NS20s, I think. And it was the predecessor to the NS10. Well, as Yamaha tends to do, they discontinued that. And the only speaker that was close was this NS10. But the reason why the high end was different, so he started putting this, sheet of toilet paper over the tweeter. And everybody kind of copied that. It was kind of like, well, if Clearmountain is doing Springsteen and, whatever, well, maybe this is something we ought to do. And by the way, let's put the sheet of toilet paper on top of the tweeters as well. So it was kind of like one of these things where, well, he's doing it, so I ought to. And I don't know why, but he does it, so I'm going to do it. And this happens so much in the industry. The other thing is, I think the big reason why they've fallen out of favor is because they don't make them anymore. They stopped making the drivers. They were originally made in in Taiwan, and they closed the factory. And then they came up with another version that was never the same because it was a different factory.
That and people listen to music. Listening to music now is just a different experience. It's part of your workout. It's part of your commute. It's part.
Well, and there's way better speakers for the price.
The speaker technology
has come so far.
Because I know that when we were trying to figure out a standardization for us. Like, we just changed our whole speaker standardization just within this last year.
Right.
And it's amazing because, we had Yuri Timelines, and they did the JBL 4311s or whatever. And then all of a sudden, I remember, because I was working at Cherokee, I remember seeing Tannoys for the first time, the FSMs. And I was like, wow, listen to these. Then one of our engineers at our company, Spotoff created his own company, Keith, created KRK speakers.
Yeah.
And they had a nice little bite, but the imaging on it was just beautiful. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, events, I'm audio. I mean, there's a lot of these little cheapy speakers that sounded way better than the speakers we listened to 20 years ago.
What did you standardize on?
We standardized on the video game side. We went with Dynaudio BM-12s. Mm. I liked them. They're very, very clear. But we liked, also for TV... We hear everything. So what happens is you have to understand the frequency range is the same, but the clarity, it's like watching HD audio compared to not. But at least you get to hear everything that's going, especially imaging, how you're doing your reverbs. And then when it translates, if you get a good sounding good on that because you hear everything, it sounds very good on everything else. And we liked it a lot. For the other speaker that I really like a lot is the JBL... LSR 32 with a Bryston amp.
Oh, they're great, yeah.
And 32, they're not. It's interesting because that clarity and the imaging, and you hear every little problem on the Dynes. You won't hear it on the JBLs, but they're not going to be as bright. They're not going to be as punchy. They're not going to have all that little shine. So you got to put it on there. And then what I do is I A/B back and forth between my Dynes. So if I brighten up the JBLs, strangely enough, it doesn't. Make the Dynes brighter. It just makes it right.
Hmm.
So I find that if I could get it sounding good on the JBLs and I go back and forth between the Dynes, I'm in heaven.
Has anyone used ATCs?
Those are very good.
I've heard them. I could never in my wildest dream afford
it. Yeah, very expensive. With the BMCs, ATCs.
That's like, you know, it's a speaker or drive a car, you know. But there, I've heard, actually, I heard ATCs in Massenburg's studio over at Blackbird, where he has all that diffusion, and that was like the pinnacle of speakers. I mean,
aren't they about 10, 15 per?
Yeah, 15 grand a piece. Yeah. Well, the big ones anyway. Yeah, yeah. They have smaller ones now, but fabulous.
The smaller ones are like seven. They're like 7 grand.
But
like,
even those, the small JBL ones, the 6300s, and some of these are, I mean, I'm not comparing against ATCs, but in other words, there's a lot of really affordable, decent speaker systems out there.
Hey, really quick. Tara, where do you listen to music?
Where?
Yeah. Or give me your opinion of the BM-12s.
No, they're wonderful, yeah.
No, seriously, where do you listen to music? How do you listen
to
music?
In my car on the way to work, commuting, and at work. I torture my fellow coworkers with my iPod.
And what kind of system do you listen? Do you have like a little stereo system at work, or everybody
off of our laptops connect to the speakers at work? They're just a little, I don't even know what they are.
So we can set them, they're either through our headphones or through the speakers.
Mm-hmm. So, so which is pretty common now. I mean, it's amazing how many people don't, you know, listen to what we were mixing to or what people were mixing to back in the day.
Oh, they used to have Panasonic thrusters over in Sears, you know, I remember. You know, there were these pieces of...
Well, remember way back when in the 70s where that was a big deal for everybody to have a really good stereo system. And everybody did. Every college dorm had a reasonably good stereo system, better than, you know, what a lot of studios have now. But, it's fallen by the wayside, unfortunately. Yeah,
that's where you see in the movies, the hi-fi. Everybody has that hi-fi, and you have that hi-fi salesman, and what do you got? Well, I've got, you know.
But now everyone has the HD system. Yeah. All the guys go, you must see my 72-inch HD.
Well, great. Well, I think we've pretty much answered about the NS10s. Brandon, do you have any – you ever used them before?
I have not used them, no. I have not. I've only been doing this a couple of years, so I've never used
them. What are you using at the office?
I've got some Mackies there. I just got them from I pinched them from an abandoned editing bay.
Mm.
They're giant.
I forget the exact
model number. They're big. They might be. I forget the exact model number, but they sound good. Carry a lot of bass.
All right. Well, we did our duty. We have answered some questions. And I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we are going to talk with Tara and Tammy. Are you guys still with us?
Yeah.
I've learned so much about speakers and sound. Yeah.
They were totally taking notes and everything. They were really into it. I could tell. But we're going to talk about musicjobs.com and MediaMatch.com and the online network community that they are.
Cool.
All right. We'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by AFEX and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And prior to the break, we were talking about NS10s, and I think we pretty much beat that down to the ground. Today we're here with Tara Duffy and Tammy Romanyuk, and they're from a couple of websites, and it's really kind of funny because I actually got a message on our Audio Nowcast Facebook page, and it was from a guy named Mark Hobold, and he had been out of the country for couple years, and he wants to come back in, and he was asking, how can he get back in? How can he make some connections?
Because there's a fence.
And it just so happens that I knew we were going to be talking about this. And Tara, why don't you talk a little bit about musicjobs.com and what you guys do and the services you offer and what you're trying to do over there?
Well, musicjobs.com, as I've mentioned earlier, it's an online networking community and jobs board. So for people and employers in the music industry, if you're a music industry professional, we cover the entire span of the music industry. So whether you're a composer, an engineer, a music teacher, you know, wanting to be an intern, you've just graduated, you know, we do offer everything for everyone. We try to, at least. And so we have a jobs board on our site. So employers come to our site and post jobs in the industry, and it is nationwide. And so we're We also have a resume database. So once you sign up, we have two different memberships. And as a premium member, you have the ability to apply for any of the jobs posted on our site, see the company's information that's posting, as well as you appear in our resume database, which employers search sometimes without even posting a job. So you can have all your details there. You have your own personalized profile. You can upload MP3s, reels, you know, all your documents, photos.
So that's great. And the employers can go through there and mm-hmm. kind of
yep.
sift through it.
They can run quite specific searches. So mm-hmm. if they're looking, say, for Media Match, if they're looking for a series producer whose specialty is documentary, who speaks fluent Spanish, based in New York, they'll get a list of people who are available and be able to contact them straight away mm-hmm. and look at mm. their reels
wow.
and all of that sort of thing.
So, and what sort of companies use it? Do you have any employers that...
We've got all the, from the big guys to the little guys, and one of the neat things on the... We actually just launched a redesign for both Media Match and Music Jobs, so we have this new, fresh, very functional look. And we have one of the sidebar elements is you can see the recently logged on employers. So you can see who's just been on the site in the past, you know, couple hours that day,
wow.
whatnot. So you can see all of that. I mean, we have BMI, ASCAP, Universal, Fox Sports had a music supervisor job up there today. So it depends on the day, but we do have from all the big guys to some of the studios and some of the boutique companies as well.
So musicjobs.com deals with the music, and Media Match is more than...
Is the film and TV
film
side
and
of things.
TV.
So it's production crew and it's everything from interns up to showrunners.
Oh, and is it like location wow. sound and all that?
Yep,
and
yep.
mixers?
It's all,
and
yeah, boom operators, production sound mixers, sound designers, sound editors, Foley, or, you know, everything basically.
And have you guys just launched? Have you been around for a little while, or are you just now pushing a new push in the U.S.? Or?
Media Match has been around about 10 years.
Okay.
Are you tied with the unions at all?
There's some union jobs on Media Match, but it pretty much is non-union stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, but occasionally we do get the union things. But if it's like a feature film, there's some feature films, they're in like Louisiana and
right.
sort of out of state or Michigan.
Well,
and
what are the most predominant jobs that both of your companies seem to have? Just out of curiosity, what are the ones that seem to pop up the most?
I would say the ones that I see more, producer, field producer, series producers, production assistant, first AD. It goes in waves. Editors, you'll have a wave of editing positions for a while, and then it will be quiet on the editing. And then you'll have a wave of producer jobs, and it will be a little quiet. And then makeup artists, and sort of comes in.
Have you found that there's any cyclic cyclic wave where you say, okay, everyone seems to be going into production into August, and everyone seems to be doing post in February? Because that's where the jobs have. Have you noticed any trends?
There are seasonal trends,
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah.
How about the music side?
As far as the trends or the jobs?
Yeah. What's the most predominant job that you see?
It's kind of the same as Tammy. I mean, it does come in waves, and it just kind of depends. But there's lots of, you know, in the office side, there's lots of executive assistant sides. There's a good amount of internships, composers, some, you know, offhand projects, music teachers, some different musician positions within different symphonies and things like that. So,
out of curiosity, do you see anything for social media?
Yeah, there's definitely – usually they're more entry-level positions, so they're starting to creep in, but I do see them – they want a lot of free people to come and do that for now. But
when I was writing a book – well, I wrote a book last year called Music 3.0,
mm-hmm.
and I interviewed a dozen people that were heavyweights in the industry, and what most of them ended up saying was that there's now the – everyone is looking for the fifth Beatle in a
mm-hmm.
band, and the fifth Beatle is the social media person.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was someone that was critical to an artist's development
mm-hmm.
now, where that position didn't even exist
exactly.
You know, 5 years ago, and now it's something that's the fifth Beatle.
It's definitely, you see it creeping in. Like I said, a lot of times they want interns to do that, or it's being compiled onto an already existing position. Lots of marketing different in that aspect as well, where they want, oh, yes, and also do all the social media as well. So
yeah.
So when you're starting this online network community, and it's more than just a job board, right?
Right.
You guys are going to, you know, you have forums and
mm-hmm.
places,
blogs
and people
yeah.
for places to get together. I think that's really important because I'm going to recommend that to Mark because, you know, he was asking about read the Recycler or Craigslist and getting taking any jobs that are there. And I don't know. I have to admit, I look at the Craigslist job postings all the time, but it just seems to me that that's just a really bad place to find, you know, a good gig. I'm not going to say you're not going to find a gig, but a lot of times they, you know, wanted a feature film mixer for a 2-hour documentary, must have own gear, have $400.
Yeah.
You know, and
must be willing to be murdered.
And it's just, you know, most serious jobs, they don't show up on Craigslist. It's through your network, and that's it. Sounds like it's a great place to start your network.
It's interesting though with Craigslist. Sometimes some good jobs are posted on Craigslist, and you're like, why? I mean, how? You know, they're not going to get. You know, it's just interested their mindset or whoever posts that, why they thought that could get. You know,
it might be because people just know it exists and they don't know what the other.
Yeah. But then on the other hand, I know people who were looking for a producer for producers for a feature film. They found the producers off Craigslist, and their feature film got into Sundance, and they actually ended up winning an award. So, you know, that's quite interesting.
They
should have used Media Match.
Well, something about Media Match, though, is you guys can act as a filter, too, because if you post a job – man, you never know what kind of response that you get. I've done a couple.
I mean,
that's
our biggest concern because with our company, we start putting an ad out. What poor person has to now funnel
hundreds
through all of that response? And we've thought about it a lot at our company, but the onslaught of just spending the time sorting through who's good or who's not is you know. Intimidating.
That's one of the nice things on both sides with the resume database is that you can search exactly what you're looking for, so you don't even have to put an ad up.
Right.
So you can hand pick if you want without having to put it out there if you want, and then just contact those select people.
Right.
So sometimes that does work better depending on what you're looking for.
And we also, when we send out the job alerts, you know, they're quite specific. Mm-hmm. So if someone's looking for an avid editor who's a specialty in reality TV, they'll go out to those people who've made those selections.
Right.
And also because we are subscription-based, it's only a very small subscription fee, but you have a very good community and nice community of people who are really serious about what they do and everything. So sort of weeds out a lot of...
And do people contact each other directly then or through the site?
Or they contact each other directly. Employers can contact people via email or the telephone number that's listed on the profile.
But they can also go through the site, too.
Yeah, or they can contact each other.
Is there a success rate you guys have of people who have joined the site?
Have great testimonials, and then we send something out called Here's Looking at You Kid every Friday that goes out to everyone and tells them what employers have viewed them. So they sort of get an idea how it's working. But because it's all between the employer and the...
It's like a professional dating service.
I think it's really
kind of
important.
Like that.
Really important for people to be specific about what they do, because speaking of editors that, you know, only do reality, I produced a couple of TV shows, and I know looking for editors, I get somebody with a great reel that does commercials would be terrible at doing, you know, factual television, for instance. And I've gone through so many different types of editors. They have wonderful reels that were particularly good at one thing and could not do that other thing no matter what. And when it came to dialogue, they just could not get it. And very frustrating. And I think it's really important for, you know, anybody when they're putting out a resume to say, this is what I'm good at.
Yes.
Because it makes a big difference. Because, you know, and people think, well, just because I know how to do this, I can do that as well. And it's not always the case. Maybe you can do it, but you can't do it well, and you don't do anybody.
Well, it's like getting a classical composer to do dance music or something. You know,
exactly.
It's just not a good
thing. But one thing I found interesting, having worked, let's say, L.A., New York, and London, in L.A., it's very compartmentalized. I mean, there are some people, like dialogue editors will do dialogue, sound designers do sound design, picture cutters do picture cutter, and they're very good at that, but they don't know each other's jobs. Then you go over to London, which is what I thought was interesting, is you'll have a picture cutter will also do the sound effects and dialogue and maybe mix it. Because there is no other choice. There is not that many – there's not that much demand for that many people.
Right.
And those people that do the job kind of do everything. Kind of same in New York. So it's interesting when you have the people, let's say, from London coming to L.A., and they'll be working on a major feature film, and they're used to doing a lot more. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to see the dynamics. Here, you know, mixers don't edit, editors don't mix, you know, conceptually. And in London, the guy, you know, when I did Hellboy over there, he said, oh, yeah, my next gig is going to be doing some documentary editing, because it's just a gig is a gig, and it's not like, ooh, I'm doing a feature. It's just another job. Some are big, some are small, whatever.
It's different over here.
Yeah, here it's all different.
But you know what? Slowly but surely, though, it's changing. I know a lot of mixers that mix, edit, do the whole thing. I mean, that's what I do. I mix, I edit, and sometimes the sound design too on a lot of the independent stuff. So I mean, it has to, because
it depends on, you know, what style,
what level.
You know, it's not even level. It depends, because I don't want to say like one's a higher level than another.
But it
depends on what medium that you're working in. I think the reason why film and TV, it's not that they couldn't learn how to do it.
Right.
They don't have the time. In other words, they got to cut. It's being turned around so quickly that theoretically, I know a lot of directors that are really good picture cutters and a decent sound people if they had 2 years in post. But a lot of times they've only got, you know, 20 weeks.
That's true.
And they got to do everything. And these poor guys, the directors, are exhausted at the end because they're working with so many crafts.
You know what? I want to make one incredible generality. I mean, it's way overbroad and everything else. But as a rule, doing the same job, a specialist will always end up making more money than a generalist.
Sure.
Always. So same thing, like if I'm talking to new composers, you know, you want to be known, even if you're good at a lot of different kinds of music, and even if every client knows you as a specialist in a different kind of music, you will do much better if they think of you as a specialist in something as opposed to saying you're good at everything. You may be good at everything, but it's a bad idea to market yourself that way.
Right. Well, that's true. I mean, I would market myself as a mixer, but then I could also edit and do sound design, and sometimes you win it all, and sometimes you have to do your own little niche. But the budgets, especially on the independents, technology is getting to the point where you can do higher level work with less of a budget, but you still need that person in there that knows how to do it. So,
well, you know, one thing that's great about indies, because I'm exposed to indies in a different way. You've got a DP who wants to be a director. Nobody's going to hire him as a director because he's unproven. So he ends up doing an indie. You've got actors that are typecasted. Sandra Bullock in Crash.
Right.
She's a bigot. She's never going to be casted as – she's always the girl next door. She's sweet. Now, Brandon Fraser, the same thing. There's a lot of times where people want to step into a different role that the industry's not willing to let them do. And these people are big film people, but they can't break out of their mold, whether it's directors or producers or anybody in the crafts. And the indies, it's like you're doing it because you want to do it. And they get great opportunities to do something totally different.
What do you guys see? Do you see mostly generalists, or do you see people that are very specific in what they do?
Depending on the job type, I think it can be more specific or the generalist. But one thing that is nice on the sites that both have is that you can have you have your online resume, and you can have up to four online resumes. So as you submit it, you could have like a composer, and you could have or a mixer. So then you don't come off as the generalist if you want. So as you apply for a job, you send that specific resume. So if you're applying for the composer job, you send your composer resume. The employer links back to your profile. They only see your composer online resume. Right. So that shows, you know, this is where I've honed my skills in this area, and doesn't, you know, if you want to open it up to be more wider, you can, but you can narrow it down and just be specific.
That's a very good idea.
Yeah.
I find with the profiles that are the generalist who put everything in, it's a bit overwhelming.
Sure.
And I think overwhelming from employers. You know, they've asked for one thing, and this person's really selling themselves with five different things.
That's
and I
true.
Think it's not a good thing, and I probably wouldn't advise someone to do that. Like we're saying, just concentrate on what you're really good at, and then bring it up later.
But I think what I was more going towards is not the generalist, but how does someone step out of their role? Like I've done it 20 years, and I can know tons of people that don't want to do that anymore. They want to grow.
Right.
But nobody wants to give the opportunity, because in actuality, you may be good at something, but the moment you break out of that mold, like if I want to be a director, I do sound design and major motion pictures. If I want to be a director, I'm starting all over again. I mean, I'm just like anybody else out there.
Which is But that's right. That's the way it should work.
Right. But what's great about indie films is indie is, because there's pretty much no money in it, they really want talented people. So if they go, wow, this guy's really talented, and I get someone who's got experience, and this all of Hollywood's that way. That's why when you go to Sundance and all of these quote-unquote indie films mm-hmm. have major people tied to them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's true.
A buddy of mine just did Get Low, and he's got Sissy Spacek, Bill Murray, and Robert Duvall in his indie.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know.
That's just not fair.
But you know what? All of them want to do roles that Hollywood's not willing to
the meaty
cast
roles.
Them in.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
Well, look at Bill Murray when Lost in Translation. I'm sorry. That's a perfect example. It was so not it. Let me ask you, what are the and I'll bring it up to the whole panel too. But give me some do's and don'ts as to what you guys find people should either do or not do when they post on your site or when they're trying to get a job through your site. Do you know anything right off the bat that you can say?
Write an actual cover letter. Don't put one line or your name or anything
like that.
I'm
a really hard worker.
Really yes. Sell yourself in your cover letter because there are so many applications, especially mm-hmm. at this time with the economy and everything, for a job. So you're getting hundreds of applications and you're getting extremely high-quality people applying for the job, so the competition's fierce. So you need to really sell yourself and not have paragraphs and paragraphs, but list the companies that you've worked for, that you're open to negotiate, your rates, what equipment you have, all of that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And because there has to be a reason for an employer to pick up that phone and call you or look at your profile.
So just because it's a creative job, don't think you can not do things the proper way.
Correct.
With your resume.
Yeah.
That makes sense because, you're going to, especially if you're coming from a major company, Universal, mm-hmm. Disney or something, they're used to proper resumes and they're mm-hmm. used to looking at things the right way. So,
I mean, Tara's had a few
special people.
Interesting cover letters and things like that.
It doesn't matter the job. You want to keep a level of professionalism, no matter what it is. You want to put your best foot forward and show that you are the best thing for that company, for that job, no matter what it is. So, I'm perfect for this isn't quite going to cut it. The employer's looking for a little bit more than that, because why should they spend the time on you when all you can only spend one sentence to not even convey anything?
You mentioned about a premium level. How much does that cost?
For both the sites, it's $10 a month or $60 a year on Music Jobs, and it's $75 for an annual membership on MediaMatch.
And do people, you say the cover letter is so important. Do people do a different cover letter for each specific job they want to apply for?
I can,
Yes, you can, or you have the ability to save previous cover letters, so you can recall them and then do slight edits if you keep kind of a general lineup. But I do suggest making a personalized cover letter for every job. I mean, using the same basics, but actually address the company that you're applying to. Something about them.
I think that one thing that a lot of applicants don't get, and I've seen this just in other parts of the industry, the most important thing you can do as an applicant is to put yourself in the mindset of the person you're trying to get hired by.
Exactly.
And try to think about what is it that would impress me if I was trying to hire someone for this position.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not that hard to do.
But so many people don't do that.
No,
exactly what you're so right. They need to
it's
do
a
that.
Really important thing.
I think what's impressed me as I'm listening to this is the level of professionalism you bring to getting a job in the industry. Because a lot of times people think about audio or getting in the music industry as, it's kind of hip or cool or laid back or whatever. And, you got to be professional. If you want to be a professional, you got to present yourself as a professional. And
well, because everybody you're competing with is.
The thing, I think that's one of the things about a Craigslist posting is you have no point of reference when you see that, other than the only point of reference you have on a Craigslist posting, really, if they don't tell you much about what you're going to be doing, is how much they're paying. Because that's going to kind of give you an idea of, what am I getting myself into?
Let's face it, you're going to be bringing coffee to a porn set. Basically what you're signing up for.
Well, let's talk about the job market in general. Do you find that as the economy seems to be slowly trying to make that bend, are things picking up? Are you seeing more posting? Or
I'm seeing with MediaMatch, it's definitely slower than it was a couple of years ago. And I just get the feeling talking to people,
There's less stuff in production.
Less money is harder to come by. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Less commercials being made. I mean, all sorts of things. Yeah. And then things are, of course, going out of state. So Los Angeles doesn't have as much as it used to be in terms of...
But you're national, things. Right?
Mm-hmm. They're international.
We're international. Uh-huh. Yeah, we do cover.
So if the production was just moving to another part of the country, you would think you'd be...
Yeah, but most of our people are based in Los Angeles and New York. I mean, we do obviously have crews and all over the place, but mm-hmm. I speak to the Los Angelinos, and they're the ones who are, you know, sad that the jobs are...
Gotcha.
How about commercials? Is there still a fair amount of business in commercials?
I think that what I've heard speaking to a few people is that they're tightening up the purses on that, and there's not so much money like there once was.
I think companies having extra money to do more production-type work. The economy's mm-hmm. slow right now, and when you look at what do you need to spend your company's money on, big marketing budgets for their companies are doing very well, but other companies, hey, the ad we ran last year is doing fine. It's good enough. Mm-hmm. It gets our name out there rather than keep having to spend the big bucks.
I find that – well, let me step back for a second.
Step back, Mike.
wait.
Let's talk. If you were coming out of school right now and you wanted to work with audio in some capacity.
Listen to it.
Where would you guys go? Where would you – would you try to be a sound designer? Would you try to be a mixer? Would you, you know, composer? I mean, where would you go? Where – just, you know, barring, you know, let's just say this person can write music, but, you know, but even if you're going to be a composer, I don't think you could – that would be enough. I mean, where would you go? What kind of advice would you give somebody?
I think the only thing – these days that you could recommend to someone is that if they have an extreme passion for something, they should follow that passion. The idea of thinking that going into any of these industries just makes good business sense if you're not that into it, that's just ridiculous. But if you have a passion, if you want to write music, if you want to do remixes, if you want to be a DJ, if you want to be a producer, an editor, a director, a writer, whatever, the trick is to just start doing it, and if you have talent, it's going to be discovered because there is an endless hunger for talent. They don't always want to pay for it, but everybody's hungry for it. And you will be discovered, and you will be able to have a career. But unless you have a specific passion, I think if you're coming out of school wondering, well, do I want to write music or do sound effects or mix or edit or whatever, then that means you probably shouldn't be doing any of it.
Matt, you know what? You're right. You're absolutely right.
But if you come out of school saying, all I want to do is write music, and if I can't do that, I don't want to live, well, then you should write some music. But I really think you have to be passion-driven like that because it's not like any of this stuff makes sense as a career on any other level.
Well, it's –
you got to be a little crazy.
It's hard to have a career in working in audio. I mean, it's kind of what we talked about in the last podcast. It's like, man, sometimes I look working, you know, I'm going, you know, 20 years or so in the business, and my career has morphed many times and will probably continue to morph because you just have to kind of follow where you follow the money, follow the gigs, and you morph your skills and you keep going. But you're right. Most of it was on passion because I'd have a home studio even if I didn't have a job mixing.
You've got to be doing things that you'd be willing to do for free because you love doing them so much. Because for a while you might be doing them for free.
Mm-hmm. You know, I represent a pretty big company and we do a lot of hiring. And I do all the interviews for my group. Here's a couple things. Here's a couple secrets. Okay. First of all, when you interview, know who you're interviewing for. Know what the company is, who the players are in the company, mm-hmm. what work they do, who the competitors are, who their clients are. If you don't invest the time in investigating who you want to work for, then why bother? Why waste my time?
Yep.
In other words, you've got to really be professional. I don't want to know how passionate you are. I mean, first of all, you've got to be good enough. Okay. So you got a really big pool of people, and then you narrow it down to a few thousand people that are really good enough, who are actually talented enough. Now the question is, all right, I'm going to meet with you and a whole bunch of other people. Why? Now, all of a sudden, when you get someone who's a little quick-witted, who really sharp, they stand out.
Mm-hmm.
They sit there and say, hey, listen, I realize that Technicolor just did this. You've done that. You're doing this. It is a position. I notice you guys work with a lot with Capcom, Activision, or whatever. The studios are just like, wow. First of all, they're blown away that you actually did research.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go, and I know these are the players. It's all on everybody's website. You know who the major players are. And if you can go in and start talking like this, I guarantee you got everybody's attention. Then you got to have a demo. Now, when you do a demo, there's no excuses. You present your material the best that it can be. You are representing yourself. There's no, I didn't have enough time, I didn't have the gear, I didn't... Just let me hear it, and then it's got to speak for itself.
By the way, he actually does say, right at that moment.
I do. Yeah, and the thing is, you know, and I can, my interviews can last 30 seconds or can last 2 hours. Because if I find, and I'm gonna do a call up, because there's one girl who's blown me away, and she's got the perfect story on the interactive side. What we did is I, at the GDC Game Developers Conference, we do something like American Idol for sound designers. So every sound designer comes up and gets to present their wares. Okay. So this one girl, you know, the people at the back of the rooms that hand out flyers to everybody, everybody who ends up doing it for free. So everyone comes up, does their stuff, and this one girl in the back says, look, I'm one of the volunteers here. Could I submit? And we're like, okay. Then she submits a demo, and most people use Nuendo and Pro Tools and stuff like that. So she puts the demo together, and it was okay. It was very good, but not great, but good. She did it actually in a programming language.
Yes.
All of a sudden, she comes from middle America. Nobody knows who she is. Everybody on the panel, business cards. You've done it the hardest way possible, and you took the hardest road. And then so she got an EA, and then she came to me, and she says, well, my gig at EA is done because EA is laying off. And here's my story. I came out, and I drove my car, and blah, blah, and I've been trying to make it in, and I really want to do this. She's now working on a demo for me, and she is so much of my attention. Because here's somebody who's smart. She's worked really hard. She's taken the hardest road, and the demo's pretty good. So now all of a sudden, how can I not give her my attention?
Yeah. Yeah.
All of us. So when people really, really fight and they, you know, they show you they want it and they've got the talent, because you're thinking, wow, if they come in here and 2 years down, they've got that motivation, they can become one of the biggest players in our business. Because that's what you're looking for. You're looking for those people that are looking to push the bar to really take it someplace, and everybody's impressed.
And might I just point out that you've now said the most important thing that you sense from them is their passion.
Their passion and the smarts.
Well, but the smarts, I mean, yeah, a passionate idiot.
But I'm going to see people go, oh, I really want to do this, I really want to do this. What's your name again?
No. I'm not saying passionate idiots aren't going to get too far. But
yes.
It's the passion and the drive, the thing that made them want to do this, whether or not they were going to be able to make any money.
Yeah.
Is why they're going to make a lot of money.
And I think that also goes back to their cover letter to catch your attention in the beginning, because it speaks more than just can they do the job. It's right. How are they going to do the job? Are they going to be easy to work with? Are they going to be on time? And are they going to, you know, all of those, it plays into their entire character.
It is a big mistake. I've seen this a lot too. It is a big mistake to pretend that you're the only one who can do a job.
Yeah.
Sure. There's tons of competition out there. There are lots of people who can do the job.
Well, and I think another big mistake is, you know, you can't really buy yourself into your career, into your job.
You can make an offer.
No, because you know what? Eventually, it's going to come down to your talent. You're going to have to prove you're good. I mean,
and
get close.
And when I first, Wiley Stamen, who started Sound Deluxe, and when I first got hired by this guy, you know, long, 25 years ago, I said to him, I got a question. So many talented people out there. How can you decide who to hire? And he says something very profound. I hire the person that I could sit a whole month in a room with.
Mm. Well, there you go.
You got to like the person, too.
Yeah.
The other thing. In the audio business, especially when we're in studios that are locked up like in a submarine for a long time, where if you have a person with bad personal hygiene, that's no good. And if you have a person who has a bad attitude, That doesn't work either. So you have to have a great attitude, and you really have to, you know, have good personal hygiene. And as funny as that sounds, it's so important.
It is so important. I got a funny story on that. Sorry, it's just all coming back, the memories. I worked with this individual, and he's an artist, and I was doing some programming for him. And actually, at that time, I was key teching and getting ready to go out on tour, and he had a programmer there. And the programmer had the worst personal hygiene ever. I mean, literally, when he left, he didn't really leave. He was there for another half hour. It was that bad. And what ended up happening is, and I'm trying to dance around this whole thing because I don't want it to come back. But what ended up happening was they got rid of that person, amongst other things, because he was a real jerk, but because he just didn't have good personal hygiene. And I ended up getting the gig. And so let me tell you, if you're out there, personal hygiene, because there could be some clean kid in the back room that's going to take your hand.
Brush your teeth, people.
but it's true. You're going to spend so much time with this person. I mean, one of the things that I like to do with my clients is, you know, I like to befriend them, because if you're working with somebody that likes you and you like them and you get along, you know, it's no longer a job. It's kind of like an adventure. You're kind of doing this together, and there's a little give and take, and they're more open to taking your advice, and it just makes a pleasant experience. And then when you're done, it's not they just finished a job there, but they went through this experience, and if you've kind of bonded as friends, hey, guess what? They're gonna want to work with their friends, you know. So it's just it really, a good attitude never works against you in that situation.
I also think the second hardest thing to getting the first job is getting the second job, and I think that when you're on the first job, reliability. I'd rather have somebody a little less talented, but dead reliable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, years ago I did a movie called Team America, and the mix, forget about pre-dubs. Pre-dubs was, you know, 7 days a week, 9 to midnight, and that was our short days. We literally did 14 days of 20 hours a day. We had hotels. We were sleeping where we stood. It was the most craziest thing, but what it did was all of a sudden it divided people in the room. Those people that didn't want to do it anymore because it was too hard, and those people that were there every minute as best as they could, stayed with it, mm-hmm. those are the people that advanced. And I've seen people, when we've hired young people come in and we give them an opportunity, it's amazing how probably 80% of them fail just because they lose interest. Because they're like, this is too hard. I don't want to do it. Next. Mm-hmm. And then there's one or two people that, I don't care if it's actors, I don't care if it's sound designers, when you're called and you're doing it and you're bringing it all on all the time,
right,
and you're giving it your best, people see that, mm-hmm. and they like that, and they'll give you more opportunities to grow, you know, and I think it's really important for those people that are trying to get in. You got to remember what to do once you get in.
Yeah.
Well, hey, listen, we're gonna start wrapping this up, but before we go, we got to answer one more question that
42.
Mark put out. He goes, also, if you've done a lot of radio music post-production but want to get into audio for video film, do you guys have any suggestions on how to jump the gap? So how do you jump the gap? If you want to go to another discipline, what do you guys think is the best way to do it?
There's no secret magical way. The thing that I found over the years...
Oh, you mean the handshake doesn't work?
it's a secret handshake. And have good personal hygiene. The thing that has worked for us in the past is if you have worked with someone in a previous field and they've moved on to that other field, like find a previous client who you worked with in your current field who's maybe moved on to more of the kind of work you want to do,
right,
and try to team up with them again. That's how I got into movie trailers. It's how I got into some interactive stuff. Because you can build bonds with people in one part of the industry, and people move on, and you check back with them a few years later. It's a good idea to go back through your Rolodex and see if you may already have a contact in the field you're trying to get into that you weren't thinking of.
That's true. Another suggestion that I have would be to join an online network community.
And you can do so with a free month on MediaMatch and Music Jobs
right
now. We have a premium offer for you guys.
Wow. Tell us about it.
Well, it's a special link that you can go to. It'll also be on the Audio Now site shortly.
We'll post it on the Audio Now cast site.
For music jobs, it's a free month, full access. It's normally the $10 monthly fee, free for you. Don't have to put your credit card in, anything like that. And the link is just us.music-jobs.com/premium.php. I know that's a lot, but it'll be on Audio Now site. Yep. And the code is podcast. And Tammy has hers as well.
Ours is media-match.com/USA/premium.php.
Hi, what's your address?
No, you know what?
That's right.
And it's podcast too.
I will absolutely post the links to both of those because I can't remember them. But what's kind of cool is I went to the music jobs ones and it said Audio Nowcast there.
See?
We care about you guys.
So we need an intern.
No, but seriously, I looked at the site and I think it's a great idea. You know, sure, you're going to be paying a little bit of money, but, you know, it's...
Oh, it's pennies, though, for what you could get out of it.
What you can get out of it, and it's just a great way to weed out all the chaff. And it's
for employers, it is absolutely free. We think it helps keep the site professional, helps keeping the employers come back, you know. So it is completely free for employers to post jobs and contact people. And
we have great customer service.
Yep. If
they call, they get a call back.
Tammy or myself.
Yeah. Well, hey, there you go. You hear that?
I'll sign up.
That's right. I'll sign up. I need a job. I just want to be part of the online network community.
That's right.
But, you know, I think actually you said the word community, and I think that's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. In that if you want to get into a field, you need to understand who the players are. You need to understand the community. You need to understand. You need to have something to talk about.
Right.
Oh, did you hear about so-and-so, what he's doing? And you need to be part of that community, not outside looking in, but try to give at least the illusion that you're in, and then...
Yeah.
And also, a great way, speaking of that, to promote yourself within that community is, you know, talking about all this, you know, the online communities. You can, you know, get your own website. If you're creating stuff at home, post videos, post it on YouTube, on Vimeo. Get your stuff out there of what you're doing and show people what you can do.
Yeah.
You know, Diego's a great example.
Oh,
he posts all kinds of videos
out
there.
He's
a marketing genius.
Of marketing, yeah.
Also, I'm going to say one thing, because I get approached a lot. And I did this sort of accident how I got started. Everybody comes to you and wants something from you. So it's like, hi, how can you help me become a big career? One of the things is actually just become friends with people. Honest to goodness friends. They may not be able to help you directly, but they may know somebody who can help you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true because I met a guy when I first started. I was a music synthesis guy working for a studio player. And he goes, oh, we need to know music editor. So we went to lunch with this music editor guy. And he seemed to like me. Could have been old enough to be my dad. He was working at Universal. And I saw it and took him to lunch and did all that. And he liked me. And then I saw what he did. And he said, you know what? Would you like a job? And I said, you know, it's very interesting what you do, but it's really not my thing. I think I'll pass. But you want to do lunch, like, in a couple weeks. Anyway, wait a minute. You turn me down for a job, you still want to go for lunch. I said, yeah, I really enjoyed, you know, hanging with you, but what, you know, because he was on working on Mag, and it just wasn't my thing, and I was a studio cat, so I turned him down, and he was so blown away, and then he became, actually, I owe my own career to him, because he introduced me to everybody, including Wiley, who I joined for Soundlux, and if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be where I am.
Wow.
And he didn't hire me, but he knew a guy who we'd be friends, who I became partners with, and, you know, my whole career's that way.
Mm.
So a lot of times, it's just become friends. Everyone sees the phoniness.
Right.
Hi, I need you. Are you going to help me? No. Okay, goodbye. Network.
It's a relationship.
Yes,
and
it's all real relationships.
Which, in a community like what you guys are building over there at Music Jobs, just it's a great way to get to know people. I'll tell you what, in the Audio Nowcast on our Facebook page, we're starting to have a nice little community. There's regular posters, and there's people that are kind of interacting. And it's just – it's really cool to kind of be part of something.
Exactly.
You know, whether it's a podcast webpage or it's, you know, an online networking community. It's really kind of cool. It's all this whole thing of tribes, and you want to be part of a tribe. You want to identify yourself with them.
Yeah.
And then later on, just ask to borrow money. No, All right. Well, hey, listen, we're wrapping up. Thank you so much, Tammy and Tara.
Thank you
so much. And appreciate the giving away the month for free.
That's great. Yeah.
That's really great. And before we go, I got to give a couple of shout-outs. We have Bill with us, who happens to have been a...
Bill Knopf.
Bill Knopf.
Woo. Bill Knopf.
Of NASA.
Of NASA. Back in podcast... 4.
I don't know. It's been a long time.
It's been an early one. but he was with us and talking about search. And Bill, we're going to have to get you back on because so much has changed.
Yes,
and that's one thing that maybe on the next podcast we're going to talk about is how do we work with all this data? How do we start our sessions? How do we maintain all the data through the whole project? I've had a couple people ask about that, and that's a show in and of itself. We will revisit that. But yes, Bill.
I'd love to.
I just had to give you a shout out. The other shout out I got to give out is to, we have a new producer, and Jeremy Davis.
All right, Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy.
He's officially going to be producing the show with us.
He has all been right. pulled into the vortex.
And let me tell you, he is coming through big time. Like I said, he's going through all the shows right now and writing notes about all of them because we're going to be revamping the website and all our tags and everything in a proper format. And it's funny, he's already told me some stuff about some of the predictions that we've made and some of the...
How's our batting average?
I don't really have a good number, but I think it's about half and half. But some of the bad ones are pretty epically funny.
Good.
Wow. you want to mention a bad one? Go ahead. It can be about me.
Yeah, Mike, I was going to say the only one I have on hand is about you. Mike, back in January of 2007, said that he was sure sometime in the next month that the Beatles were going to be on iTunes.
Oh, that's right. I do remember that.
Yeah, that's the last time I believed that. It's coming next month, though, Bennett.
Oh, sure it is.
So, but I just wanted to welcome Jeremy into the fold. He's done a ton of work, and
awesome.
It's going to be really cool. So he's just basically going to enable us to do a lot of stuff that we've always wanted to do, but we've never been able to do it because of time constraints. So, Jeremy, thank you so much. Rob, are you working on anything fun and exciting you can talk about?
What am I working on? I'm actually working on some commercial campaigns. I've talked about it before, but the Old Navy spots that I wrote the music for are on the air, and they have led to some other good ones, which are in the works at the moment. The Tasha Taylor album, which I think we talked about last time, is done and about to be released with some videos on YouTube. Just mixed an independent film and designed 2 web infrastructures since our last podcast.
Great.
So I have not blinked or slept.
And that was day 2. So.
It's been a little bit crazy, but actually writing the music for the commercials has been fun, and it's something I used to do a ton of and didn't for about 10 years, and it's fun to be doing it again.
And Tara and Tammy, what do you have anything going on over at your websites? Besides the redesign that you say
we just did a big redesign, so we're just kind of getting our feet wet with that still.
Yeah,
and we keep an eye out for in the next few months. We just gave an iPad away on both the sites separately, so look forward to something cool in the future, hopefully.
Ooh, really? Yeah. iPad.
The plot thickens.
Really? Can I enter?
You have one already.
Yeah.
Hey, you should see what you can do with 2 iPads. Brandon, what about you? Are you working on anything?
I'm working on a couple trailers. One is The Mechanic, and one is Faster, and one is called I Am Number 4. Probably the same ones I was working on last 2 weeks ago.
Great.
And hopefully you've made some progress.
Yes.
Scott.
Head out. No, I just got finished designing and mixing Epic Mickey. I think it comes out in November. It won a ton of awards at E3, and we're pretty excited about it. And there's some videos already up on YouTube promoting it. And so that was great. It's Mickey Goes Dark.
Ooh.
And it's there. I think Disney's trying to reinvent Mickey, and it's actually a really cool concept. And we had Disney character voices doing it, and Jim Dooley did the music, which was awesome from Hans's Place. And I've just this Monday went back to Season of the Witch. I think I won't see daylight for about 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, right.
Yeah.
And Bobby, how about you? I know you're working on another book.
Just finishing up another book on studio design, designing a studio on a budget. I'm about to go into pre-production with Snoo as soon as they get off the road. And that's for a new record. And, you know, I can't wait for that to happen. It's always a lot of fun.
That's great. I bet going back into the studio after doing all this writing is just kind of like a breath of fresh air.
Well, it's especially good with those guys. They're fun, and I like the music. So that's a big incentive right there.
That's cool.
And what are you up to there, Mr. R?
Well, I'm still working with Martin and on his new album.
He Martin is, Page.
Martin Page, yeah. This is almost like a deja vu from, like, the last show.
Yes, it is.
and flashback. We're right now I'm redesigning his whole storage system that he's going to use, and that's why we're going to bring it up, because I'm trying to figure out a good way to consistently back up, you know, 3 drives worth of Pro Tools audio files that change every day automatically so that he can write and not worry about technology. Because the key to, like, working with an artist, I've worked with a lot of different artists before, and what you want to do, and actually that's a pretty good career field if you want to get in as a MIDI tech or a programmer or something like that, because a lot of times you get songwriters that, you know, they write music and they want to have as little to do with technology as possible. They want to just be able to write, and they'll, like, Martin will know, he knows enough, and he's a great mixer and he's a great writer, but, you know, I'm going to help him so that it doesn't get in the way, because as soon as technology gets in the way of a really good creative person, it's a real drag. It's a real bummer. And because it's blocking them from doing what they need to do. And I find that creative people, it's not that they like to create. They kind of have to create. They just get blocked up if they don't create. I mean, if Martin's not, he's at his happiest when he's writing music, when he's doing something. And so when, you know, a drive fails or something happens, it's just, I can tell it affects him. On a personal level, because he can't create. He can't, mm-hmm. can't go forward. So, you know, on a side note, that's actually, if you know your stuff, that's a good place to go. If you're known as like a good tech, a good Pro Tools guy, a good, you know, MIDI tech, something like that.
IT guy.
Well, yeah. But it just enabling somebody who creates, you know, you be the person that gets in between them and the disaster that's awaiting them if they click the wrong button. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, so that's what I'm doing. I'm right now trying to design a really good automated system so that every night it just backs up on its own. He doesn't have to worry about losing anything.
That's cool.
And the next day he can go out and about. So that's what I'm doing. One thing before I go, I just want to make one more shout out to Sean Duffy, Tara's husband. Sean is a mixer over at Trailer Park with me, and he covers a lot when I have to be here. He's doing the work over there. So, Sean, thanks for coming, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
Got him to talk.
All right. Well, I just want to remind everybody that if you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. You can also check out our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/audio nowcast. So don't forget, I'm going to post a link to the,
Music Jobs and Media Match.
Music Jobs and Media Match, yes. And I was trying to say, because it's music-jobs.com.
Yeah, yeah, the website's, it's us.music-jobs.com. Made as long as possible.
I'm just going to post the link. And just know, I really encourage you guys to check it out, sign up for a month, and if you like it, you know, stick around and join them for a year. And if you don't like it, well, you know, tough. All right, well, for myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.